Good evening, I'm C. Kim Gabadeli. You're watching Stockwatch. Thank you so much for joining us. Tackling your questions in studio tonight, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree and again, Graham Kerner from Kerner Perspective. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392. You can also email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks for your time. Today, let's start with this market. It's really kind of been held to the vagaries of what is happening between the US and China, and you've seen it from equities to emerging market currencies as well.
Yeah, although the rand was only slightly off at 14.38, so, but I think there is an unease. You know, I think a lot of people thought, okay, Trump is going to put this ban on and then he'll probably change his mind in the next couple of days, but it's really become quite binary. I don't think many people know how it's going to play out. And of course, paradoxically, everybody is now anxious, and EM of course is bearing the brunt of it. And you've seen China, I think, on a 1 month view is down 11%. It had a bit of a run, but still, of course, well short of where they were quite a few years ago. So you just get the feeling, you know, people are very anxious. But if you look in the US on a 3-5 year view, they're still absolutely flying. They're the pick of the bunch. But I get the feeling there's a lot of unease. The only thing that I think is sort of giving the markets, I'm talking global markets, US in particular, is the sort of Powell put. That's giving the market a bit of comfort. But the rest of it, it just feels really confused and quite anxious, actually.
Anxiety, uncertainty, there's opportunity in that, isn't there,
Jake? Definitely. Although I was one of those confused portfolio managers yesterday. I was looking at my portfolio, my global portfolio, and I have a few semiconductor stocks in there. I was telling myself, do I sell the semiconductor stocks? Is this Huawei thing going to be big? Are we going to see a big dent in demand for semiconductor chips, silicon chips,
chip
or not?
Makers,
and I was very confused. And at the end of the day, I did nothing. And today, that looks like the right decision. But it's so difficult. The politicians do one thing or another. Yes, it is opportunity. But it's very difficult because to take advantage of that opportunity, you need to sort of think what the politicians will do and forecast that correctly. And I don't know if Donald Trump even himself knows what his next step will be. So it's very difficult for someone on the outside.
And there's a lot of hope that with the G20 summit coming up at the end of June, that there will be a small meeting between Xi and Trump and hopefully a bit of a pullback. But until then, we actually, as you rightly say, don't know.
We don't know. And that's why for me, I'm after good returns.
Yeah.
Above average returns. That is my treasure. My compass to get to that treasure and my map to get to that treasure is fair value.
Yeah.
So instead of trying to forecast what politicians will do and political whims, I rather look at the valuation of the company. And from one day to the next, maybe the market will agree with me or disagree with me, but that's my compass. And that's what I compare to the price to decide, is there value to be had to buy or sell this share?
And it's not just globally. Here at home, we're waiting to see that cabinet composition, right? So the election's done and dusted. They've got a solid majority that they, you know, and a mandate to run. But now it's literally, as people say, time to roll up the sleeves and do the work.
Yeah, and I think the ratings agency, the last, has basically said, okay, you know, you're on two strikes and you really better perform now. And I think a lot of us are hopeful. I think there was a broadly held view that the ANC needed to get more than 55 or President Ramaphosa would be held responsible for that, paradoxically. So I think people generally feel he's got the mandate he needs to actually now roll it out. But the South African political environment, the economic environment, it's added to by this really complex world. And I agree 100% with JP. Our job is not to come in and say, well, the market's telling us this or that. Our job is to say, I like, you know, Qualcomm or whatever the case might be for the following reasons.
Yeah.
But you know, people like Trump are making it bloody difficult to actually say, you know, do I like it? Because, you know, maybe Qualcomm is only, you know, 5 or 6% of their sales maybe going to Huawei. But the question is, could there be somebody else? So I think it's a very difficult time generally. our view is that we had a lost decade.
Yeah.
Okay, so we had 9 years, plus we had a year because
of just don't know what's happening.
Yeah. and very balanced NEC and stuff like that. So my view is if we were able to deliver, let's call it an average of about 1.5-2% GDP growth over that decade, can you imagine if we've actually got some vaguely enabling policies and we've got a slightly more business-friendly political environment. So that's what I'm clinging to.
And talking about that, you saw Coronation's results today, and I suppose that's the mentality that they're going into, going, goodness, if we can just get this environment as stable as possible, then potentially we could deliver on offer.
Absolutely, but I think the reality is over a decade, We've really done a lot of damage. If you take the mining sector, because we haven't known where we stood in terms of mining charters and policy. So you can't roll back time. You can't now create something out of nothing. But I'm quietly optimistic that we will make progress. But it's going to be a J curve.
Yeah.
Before things get better, they're going to probably get a little bit worse from an economic delivery point of view.
So do you think that's what the market's thinking, given that they pulled Coronation back 2.7%.
Well, if you look at Coronation specifically, the AUM is less than what it was in September 2014, and the revenue is down quite a bit more because we have this active-passive battle going on between managers, and that means that they needed to cut their fees, and including that, have a big rebate on their basic fee. That if they underperform, they effectively give those fees back, and they did underperform over the last 5 years, and that's why the revenue drop was more than the AUM drop. Now, if you're an asset manager, your costs are quite sticky, quite fixed. So lower revenue, fixed cost base, that is going to have a big impact on your bottom line. That's what happened. And the international business, unfortunately, didn't grow sufficiently to pick up the slack from the local business, which has really stagnated.
All right. MMI also out, though, up 4.5%.
Yeah, I think they're talking about earnings up 19%, ahead of what the rest of the life officers have been delivering. But the reality is that they also scored quite a few own goals. They're busy sort of repairing. But it's looking better. But, I was sitting with a client the other day, and we were having an active-passive debate, and he said, "Well, I don't want to invest with the traditional life officer, and I'd rather go passive." And I think there's a strong argument for that. So it's become very difficult, I think, for those life officers to move the needle from. Let's be honest, they're ultimately asset managers to move that needle materially with, the Signias and the 10Xs and people sort of vying for assets.
What do you think is going to happen in this global debate, really, between active and passive?
Well, I mean, obviously we're active, so we'll give you our
the gospel
according to active. But what I do believe is that passive is almost self-reinforcing to a large extent. Markets go up, you get strongly trending markets. If you take the U.S., that pulls people in, that sort of becomes self-reinforcing. And it lasts for so long as it lasts. When it turns, and we've already started seeing it, our lunatic fringe small cap universe that we often sort of punt here has actually done very well in a market that's actually been quite soggy, because you're starting to see people say, okay, well, hang on a second, it looks as though the story has turned here and here. Whereas the rest of the big caps, maybe a Richemont has come out with results and Naspers had 10 cent results, but you tend to find as the tide comes in and goes out, those big caps move. But the small and mid caps that we're liking are not doing that. So we would argue that active, particularly in a market like South Africa, which is so dominated by a handful of shares, either we need to get smarter about how we index and benchmark, or I think that there's actually quite a lot of risk for passive. I think you could underperform, obviously not the benchmark, but you could underperform the broader measures.
Leo wants to know, though, if MMI is a buy.
Not yet for me. If you look at the embedded value, quite a bit higher than the current share price. So that would imply there's value, but that's one half of the equation. The other half is of the sustainable return on embedded value.
Yeah.
And that is still relatively low, I would say, in line with the cost of capital. Mm. And they need to get that up. And the new management team under Hilly Meyer is doing a great job. You try and get that up, but structurally it's difficult to move the needle. And they need to do some work. They need to still cut a few businesses that don't really contribute, like the Indian JV, for instance.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of work to do. They are following a reset and grow strategy, and they say they're almost at the end of the reset. They will grow. But even the growth targets aren't overly ambitious.
Yeah.
So they'll probably reach them, which is a good start. But I'm hopeful after that, after 2021, 2022, they'll put higher targets, more ambitious targets in the ground, and that'll give us an indication that management has got the self-confidence to really push that return on embedded value quite a bit higher.
Okay. Glia also wants to know if Glencore is a buy.
Glencore, for me, has got a corporate governance discount at the moment, and justifiably so. If you look at a lot of geographies that they operate in, there are talks of bribes and other unsavory practices.
Yeah.
They are being investigated by a few U.S. Institutions, and there could be very serious fines if they are found guilty in this regard. So even though I like the fact that they've got a very good exposure of assets, if you think about coal specifically and copper, and you think about a management team whose interests are aligned, seeing that they've got significant shareholding in the business themselves, if it wasn't for this corporate government's discount, it would be my number one pick in the mining sector. It might be my only pick in the mining sector. But because of this discount, I'm staying away from Glencore until they sort out these issues.
You wanted to add something to the end?
Well, I would agree with that commentary on Glencore, not that it would be my pick, but okay. I think that corporate finance issue is massive. What I would say is if you're looking at MMI, exactly to what Jean-Pierre was saying, that you found that Coronation's AUM, even if you look over the last year, basically unchanged. So if you're looking for something that's going to ultimately give you gearing to markets, which is what you're probably looking at when you buy a life office, I would almost now encourage you to rather look at something like Coronation.
Okay.
Because your fixed cost base is there. If you look at some of those funds, they're starting to perform quite nicely. So they're sowing the seeds now for the performance fees and for the earnings in the future. So if I look at those two, I'd say also there's a nice divvy yield coming out of Coronation. I basically distribute everything back. I would rather go there because, frankly, I see it as a market proxy or geared market proxy rather than an MMI.
Okay, and almost on the same theme, McDonald wants to know, what's your view on Investec? Will they be a value unlock with this proposed demerger of the asset management business, both of you?
I don't see a lot of value unlock because there isn't a lot of, well, let's say there needs to be duplication when the divorce happens.
Okay.
There will be two head offices, two accounting systems, two HR departments, and to a large extent, there already are. It's almost already two separate businesses. But unfortunately, most of the head office will move to the bank. So I think that will be the part where instead of unlocking value, they'll be burdened with additional head office and operational costs that the asset manager used to carry.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I don't think there'll be a huge value unlock. The two portions, depending on the price that they traded on day one, my preference would be for the asset manager. There's also a lot of international consolidation happening.
Yes.
So they could be a target, they could be a consolidator. So I'm looking forward to that, but that might really be discounted on day one, depending on the price at which the two bits trade.
Okay. Your view?
If you look at speciality banking, there's all sorts of stuff in there. And it's always sort of been one of those that I haven't been comfortable with. I agree 100% with Jean-Pierre. I think the asset management business would be probably a buy, although what we're talking about, Coronation. The question is, what is the rest of Investec worth? But if you look at the results just a couple of days ago, they were uninspiring, yeah. I think, if you have to be brutally honest. But what is Investec Asset Management's got over 100 billion pounds of
AUM. It's a big number.
It's almost, you know, it's almost like a PIC kind of play. But my sense is that it's probably only about 25% of asset value. But I would wait now, probably, and then pick up asset management if you like it. But then you can sort of say, do I want Investec Asset Management? Do I want Coronation?
That's your choice. Right. Lots of questions, one in Rhodesford's, Bidcorp, and we'll get to Raynet as well. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Stay with us. Welcome back. Let's take a quick look at international markets. As we mentioned earlier, there's a little bit of hope that tensions might be coming off on the US-China trade war with the decision today that they would pull back a little bit on the Huawei, but obviously people waiting to see what happens at the summit in June, the G20 summit. Hopefully there'll be a meeting between Xi Jinping and Trump, and they'll pull back. But you never know. Like I think was said earlier, you don't know what the politicians are going to do. Let's have a quick look at Europe. Those markets were also in the black today. Chipmaker stocks and stocks exposed to Asia were actually among some of the best performers earlier in those markets today. And still with me in studio, Jean-Pierre Fesser from Fairtree and Graham Koerner from a Koerner Perspective. Right, let's dig right back into some of these questions. Reinet, they were up 1.5% today. They reported a drop in NAV, I think.
Not in rand terms, because of the weakening of the rand that helped them. But yes, the interesting one, quite a big movement in that, where British American Tobacco used to dominate the portfolio. Now it's roughly half, with Pension Corp up to roughly a third of the portfolio. And then a lot of bits and pieces where Johan Rupert has effectively ceded a lot of his friends or acquaintances in the asset management business and private equity business, and we'll see if some of those come off. So Reinet is not a proxy for British American Tobacco anymore like it was. Pension Corp is important. And we spoke about active and passive management earlier, asset management. The one problem with Reinet still is the fee structure. Mm. It's quite onerous. I think it was more than 40 million euros that was paid in this last period in management fees. One can live off that comfortably. So I don't like it because of that fee structure.
I think the fee structure is an issue, but I think to JP's point, you sit with British American Tobacco that's been beaten down. There have been changes. If you look at the at the Attorney General in the US who was threatening the menthol story, so the way I look at this is they have slowly sold down that, probably not aggressively enough. But I think Pension Corp is a decent business. If I look at the private equity, if you look at Trilantic Euro, for example, that's up, but the rest of them, they've marked down quite heavily. Mm. So effectively, the way I would look at this is you say, okay, well, it is still almost, because it's such a big discount, you can almost say, okay, well, I'm taking British American Tobacco. I've probably got some optionality, and then I've got cash and spiders and gold and a few private equity funds. Then you're almost getting Pension Corp, which I think is a decent business, for nothing. So I agree. It's offensive that that 1.1% of NAV is sitting earmarked as management fees in to be paid. But the flip side to that is I believe you're getting a lot of optionality in British American Tobacco, and it's starting to grow up. You know, they went into a new tech venture in Singapore quite recently. Yeah. So it looks as though they're deploying capital. They brag about the fact that if you look since 2009, over the 10 years, they've got a compound growth rate of a little over 10%, which is not bad considering the kind of world we've been in. Flip side to that, of course, is we had a GFC. But I still think the discount is excessive. So somebody who's looking at buying British American Tobacco and says, you know, this Pension Corp is not a bad business, I quite like it, I would rather buy Reinet.
All right. Jared says... Dean here. It's Dean, sorry. He says, please ask JP the Bear what South African stocks he actually does like.
That's a very difficult one. it's been probably a good 4 years now that my strong preference have been more for offshore shares than local shares. But there are a few shares I am long. I still like Naspers. That's still because of the discount, similar issues to Reinet if you look at the mechanics. And then a few smaller companies. I still like Afrimat. I think a great management team. They're an interesting possible entry into the coal business right now. I like Sorgor Holdings, which quite soon will split into two different businesses. There might be some value unlock there.
And I
like Baldwin as a property play. Very cheap. Some concerns that might not be quite accurate regarding related party transactions or revenue recognition. I think there are good answers for those concerns. So those are three mostly mid to smaller companies plus Naspers on the bigger side that I have my portfolio, but none of them have really high conviction big positions.
Okay.
They are relatively small.
All right. Johan says, what does the panel think about prospects for Lewis? We haven't had a Lewis question in a while.
Yeah, so I mean, I still think Lewis is a financial services company
rather than a
furniture company. The truth of it is, I don't like the sector. There have been findings that have been adverse. I don't have a strong enough view, though. But I think in this consumer environment, with the regulators sharpening their knives, yeah. I'm a little bit anxious. But, you know, other smart people quite like it. But, you know, unfortunately, I know we get paid to come here to...
To explain stuff.
And then sometimes you actually... You know, what's it, you got love and hate, and then sometimes we're just indifferent, and I'm frankly a little bit indifferent to Lewis.
All right. Here's another one. Zeta, PFGCOH, can I still short these shares? They look very weak, and management losing a lot of face after the PSG debacle with the second dollar fees.
Yeah, quite interesting. So firstly, on the fees, that was PSG Capital, which is a very small part of PSG. I wouldn't take that out of context. Regarding Curro, Zeta, and Pioneer Foods, firstly, Zeta owns roughly a third of Pioneer Foods, so those two are joined at the hip. Zeta is trading at a discount to its holding with a bunch of other things like Zart and a few things you get with.
Yeah.
And Pioneer has come off a lot from almost 200 Rand a share to now, what's it, 70 Rand a share roughly? Mm. So I think most of the adjustment from... a lot of disappointment regarding how they hedged at the past and how their brands are struggling with input cost pressure has been discounted. Okay. And then regarding Curro, I like it, but my preference at these valuation levels has been for a while to rather invest in Advitech.
All right. Luke says, what's the panel's opinion on going long Superdry and Bank of Cyprus, then shorting Monster Energy Corporation and broad-based Turkey ETF?
I can only comment on one of those.
Okay.
Four. The others are outside my circle of competence, okay. As they say. But Monster Energy is an interesting one.
All right.
It's one of the best performing shares in the U.S. over the last 10 years. It's an energy drink company, so I think it could be competitor to Red Bull.
Yeah.
But it is expensive. Now, it's one of those very. It's one of the most difficult decisions in investment to say you've got a company that's got a great track record and you still think it's going to do well in future, but all of that is discounted in the share price. It's extremely expensive.
Hence, they're considering shorting.
So I would say you can short, but keep your eye on it because it's one of those that, as long as it creates value in a year or two or three, it will grow into its valuation. But it is very expensive. But it's expensive for a reason.
Can you comment on it?
Not really, but I think to Jean-Pierre's point, you. We're at an inflection point in markets where we're not quite sure where rates are likely to go in parts of the world. But I think if you listen to Jamie Dimon, for example, his view is that U.S. Treasury yields are very, very low. And who knows, maybe the Chinese will help us normalize those. But I think we had a very difficult inflection point. And a lot of smart people are making very strong, compelling arguments in why the S&P PE should trade much higher than it did historically because of this sort of this morphing of the underlying companies into sort of new fourth generation or
fourth industrial revolution
and sort of this whole new economy stuff. And I'm saying just wait a minute. Let's see how this thing actually plays out. And I think what Jean-Pierre is saying is exactly right. If you look at companies like Clicks and Dis-Chem,
yeah.
And the kind of ratings people were prepared to put on them. Not saying they're bad companies. Both of them are really well-run companies, but the market gets completely ahead of itself. So when you're factoring in the next 5 years of earnings growth at 30%, if you miss that once, you're going to get absolutely caned. So I agree 100%. I think high valuations generally, I'm very, very scared of. We're looking more towards... You know, somebody jokingly said we should rename ourselves NAV Capital because all we're looking for is discounts to NAV because that's where I feel comfortable right now. I don't trust this bigger fool theory. Just keep buying, pay 30 multiples because it'll unwind.
And I think the point you make about the difficulty right now with the changing in technology, the change in the way that people do things and what's the next disruptor? Mm. Going to be, right? So when you are making those decisions, you absolutely have to think far ahead.
And the problem is, if you take Microsoft, for example, for a long time, Microsoft was this tech growth story, and then suddenly it became a utility.
Yeah.
And the question is, at what point do Alphabet or Apple become those utilities? And then suddenly, Apple's a bad example because it's not on the telephone PEs.
All right, let's get your stock picks. I'll start with you, Jay.
Okay, so as usual, picking offshore share.
Yes.
And my favorite region for the last while has been Scandinavia. There are some great companies listed there. This company is listed in Sweden. It's called THQ Nordic. It's a gaming publisher, and they also develop, or they own developers of PC and console games. Also a few mobile games. but it's more the hardcore game. So if you look at the gaming market, you get PC or mobile and console, which is closer to PC, and then you get casual and hardcore. The hardcore are the guys who sit in front of the computer for hours on end. They spend a lot of money on these titles,
and therefore they can be
very profitable. So they've got a few of these titles, but no blockbusters that cost them hundreds of millions of dollars to develop like EA or Activision has. They've got a portfolio of more than 100 different games, but they make a lot of money. It costs them less, good returns, they're growing, and I like the prospects.
And Graham, you're going local.
Yeah, I'll go local, although, you know, Sasol spends so much money in Louisiana.
elsewhere, they might as well be a U.S. company.
What are they, actually? But okay, so I think I must put a caveat on. I don't know where the logical price is for Sasol, because I think you've got, again, these disruptors where you've got a lot of capacity that's come on in North America. When I look at oil at $73 a barrel and Donald Trump's walking around the Middle East, which has got lots of powder kegs with a lit match, I get quite anxious about that. If you think about Sasol, at least historically, was really a Rand oil price play. So on that metric, I can probably find value of almost 500 Rand. And you've got the optionality with Louisiana now finally generating something. But what I'm not saying buy Sasol and put it in your bottom drawer and forget about it, because I think that's the kind of share that you now need to review on an ongoing basis. But if I take a year to 2 year view, I think the earnings will be reasonably strong. I think you'll make money on that one.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much to both of you for your time today. My guests, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree and Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a great evening. Bye-bye. Let's get your stock picks. I'll start with you, Jay.
Okay. So, as usual, picking offshore shares.
Yes.
And my favorite region for the last while has been Scandinavia. There are some great companies listed there. This company is listed in Sweden. It's called THQ Nordic. It's a gaming publisher, and they also develop, or they own developers of PC and console games, also a few mobile games, but it's more the hardcore game. So, if you look at the gaming market, you get PC or mobile, console, which is closer to PC, and then you get casual and hardcore. The hardcore are the guys who sit in front of the computer for hours on end. They spend a lot of money on these titles,
and therefore they can be
very profitable. So they've got a few of these titles, but no blockbusters that cost them hundreds of millions of dollars to develop like EA or Activision has. They've got a portfolio of more than 100 different games, but they make a lot of money. It costs them less, good returns, they're growing, and I like the prospects.
And Graham, you're going local.
I'll go local, although, you know, Sasol spends so much money in Louisiana.
They might as well be a U.S. company.
What are they, actually? But okay, so I think I must put a caveat on. I don't know where the logical price is for Sasol, because I think you've got, again, these disruptors where you've got a lot of capacity that's come on in North America. When I look at oil at $73 a barrel and Donald Trump's walking around the Middle East, which has got lots of powder kegs with a lit match, I get quite anxious about that. If you think about Sasol, at least historically, was really a Rand oil price play. So on that metric, I can probably find value of almost 500 Rand. And you've got the optionality with Louisiana now finally generating something. But what I'm not saying buy Sasol and put it in your bottom drawer and forget about it, because I think that's the kind of share that you now need to review on an ongoing basis. But if I take a year to 2 year view, I think the earnings will be reasonably strong. I think you'll make money on that one.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much to both of you for your time today. My guests, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree and Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.